is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We go to the Northern Triangle, to El Salvador. A headline in these last hours: cryptocurrency around the world is much in the news because of the collapse of the prices and the alarm of the crypto traders and those who invest in a decentralized currency. However, there is one place where the headline is positive. That's El Salvador. The headline, this is from ABC News: El Salvador's Bitcoin boosting leader buys $1.5 million more. El Salvador's Bitcoin boosting president is back at it, says ABC, Associated Press report. Doubling down on its country's losing investment in the cryptocurrency by buying over $1.5 million more. There's more, but this is the very well-known Nayib Bukele, the young man who leads El Salvador. I welcome the professor because, not to comment on cryptocurrency, but Bukele is much in the news because of this. At the same time, not in the news is what we know, or in what we don't know, about mass arrests in El Salvador, said to be directed against the gangs, whatever that means. I'm suggesting narcotics, but narco-terrorism. However, Professor Bukele, he looks like, well, to be classical, a Janus. One face is smiling and looking to the future for cryptocurrency despite its turmoil. Markets fluctuate, I understand. The other side is leading to mass arrests with what I see right now is not transparency. So is this all of him, or is there more to his presidency so far? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, I think, first of all, what we're seeing with Bukele, with both Bitcoin and his policies toward gangs and other areas, really illustrate the difficulties broadly that Latin America is going through right now, as they have lost faith in traditional democratic processes and have turned to more unorthodox leaders, less constrained by rule of law and process. So as we've talked about before on the show, Bukele likes to call himself Latin America's coolest dictator, which really shows you the pitfalls of what dictatorship is all about. So as you pointed out, Bitcoin was a big bet by Bukele. It's something that appeals to the youth, but what goes up does come down. So Bitcoin is now down 60% in value. Again, the country has invested over $150 million in this. And so it's lost a lot of money, and that's creating some concerns over upcoming bond payments in January. The IMF previously had strongly recommended that El Salvador not go through with this because of these exact concerns over the volatility of the money as well as laundering. But as you pointed out, the other part of this is the policy towards gangs. And so it appears that there may have been some negotiations that Bukele could have engaged with, according to the accusations, to try to bring murders down. But at the same time, the breakdown of what may have been a truce with the gangs has led to a recent spike in murders. Some of the policies, and again, the policies towards the gangs and their treatment with brutality goes on top of, for example, other stunts that Bukele has pulled, such as when he, February of the previous year, moved the Salvadoran army into the Congress to try to intimidate them into passing laws to his favor. And so at the end of the day, what's happened with Bukele, a young population frustrated with violence and performance has turned to an unorthodox leader. And now that unorthodox leader is showing himself basically unchained to double down on whatever unwise economic policy or, frankly, whatever abusive policy in controlling violence that he personally feels best to do, backed by his party, the New Ideas Party, which now controls approximately 2/3 of the Salvadoran Congress.
There was a photograph in The Guardian earlier this year of what appeared to be convicts or people who were under arrest without shirts on, stripped down to what appears to be their underdrawers, all lined up in a humiliating fashion, back to back, with their hands manacled. This was earlier this year. Mass arrests, and the Guardian made much of it. Since then, I've not seen the story quite this spectacular, but I'm presuming the arrests are going on. At that time, it was 38,000 people have been arrested. Is there evidence that this is successful in any fashion Or is Bukele using this, I may be cynical here, is this a way of dealing with his political opposition?
Well, first of all, these policies of how you crack down on gangs, Amaro Salvatrucha, Barrio 18, have been going on for almost 20 years now, and it's never been successful in the long term. If you go all the way back to, for example, former Salvadorian president on the right, Tony Saca, when this first started emerged, they cracked down on the gangs then, again, in the early 2000s. That basically meant that a lot of the gang members were put into prisons from which they essentially had an incubator for gang leaders and gang members to begin to coordinate more effectively than they ever had before. The prisons then turned into basically national coordinating centers and recruiting centers for the gangs. And so the gang problem exploded across El Salvador, and the prisons themselves turned into an area from which extortion calls were made. Similar things happen in Honduras. Similar things happen elsewhere. It's interesting what when you referred to the prisons. That photo that you referred to was actually taken during COVID. Literally hundreds of people, forced into close proximity. So much for social distancing. It also highlights the very difficult problem that exists in Salvadoran prisons and Honduran prisons and elsewhere in terms of who controls the prisons, etc. And so, yeah, essentially, my understanding was that was one play among others by Bukele to use things under his control to try to intimidate the gangs. But again, we've seen, I think, across the region that approach, absent, a combination of social reforms and prison control and other ways of limiting gang recruitment and gang control over members in broader society. When that isn't done, intimidation tactics are successful in the short term, but in the long term, they make things far worse.
The Northern Triangle, Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador, identified in the early days of the Biden administration as a source of immigration and disruption, is said to be a driver was gang warfare and violence in those three countries. The vice president, I believe, went to Guatemala. There's been an election in Honduras. I believe Ms. Castro is now the president, related to a previous president. And we've discussed Bukele. Can we say the story is changing from the early days when there was thought that that the caravans were coming from the Northern Triangle? We know now that there are immigrants coming from Venezuela, from Africa, from Central Asia. They're coming from everywhere through the Darien Gap. But is there, what I'm concentrating on, the Northern Triangle? Is it a story that's improving, or is it the same as the Biden people found it more than a year ago?
Well, the sad fact is, John, that things have gotten worse and are getting far worse in the Northern Triangle, but they're also getting worse in other places with Venezuelan refugees, Haitian refugees, Cuban refugees, refugees from Africa coming through the region, including through Chile and up through the Darien Gap in Panama, et cetera. But essentially what had long happened in Central America is you had a combination of first of all, endemic corruption and poor government performance. Central America was long an area where significant drug flows went through. After the end of Central American civil wars in the 1980s and in 1990s, you had demilitarization at a time in which gang members were being deported from the United States, which really created a condition that, in addition to the drug operatives, you actually had the gangs, especially Amaro Salvatrucha and Barrio 18, taking off in Central America, despite being hooked into the U.S. economy through the CAFTA-DR trade agreement. The conditions in the region for investment really never took off other than some maquiladoras. And so what you have right now is a region that has long had a lack of economic opportunity and long had high violence pressures because of the gangs, because of the corruption of the economy through drug flows. Things have now gotten supercharged because with the inflationary pressures from Russia's invasion of the Ukraine, that's hitting oil prices, including transportation fuels, including cooking oil and other things, including oil for home heating. That's hitting prices for foodstuffs. And so those very Central American nations have who already were badly hit by COVID-19 in terms of health, whose governments have very little money left after all they spent on COVID-19 now are facing vulnerable populations without economic opportunity, whose prices for basic goods like food and fuel and heating and transportation are going through the roof. And so while things are getting bad elsewhere, certainly these pressures in Central America are getting up. And so what you're seeing is populist solutions like Nayib Bukele coming in El Salvador versus more conservative solutions like GMT in Guatemala versus more, frankly, leftist populist solutions like the Libre Party that you alluded to with Xiomara Castro and her former populist husband, still her husband, but former president Mel Zelaya back in 2009. So this region is flailing right now, many different solutions, none of which seem to bring the prospect of rule of law and good governance and development to address what the Biden administration calls the root causes of this immigration.
Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, looking at Central America. We're headed to Venezuela, where there's more trouble. I'm John Batchelor.